Well, here we are again Thursday. We're talking about Thursday. We're going to talk more about minor league hockey that you and I go out to see all the time. And is it cold? Remember the one time we were in the arena? And tell about the story. I forget the circumstances about that kid that scored the overtime goal. And it was Marlies, Tavares, and all those guys.
Yeah, it was the big tournament in Toronto that all the scouts go and all the GMs go is the Toronto Marlies Holiday Classic, and that's the big one because it's kind of halfway through the season. Everybody's on vacation. All the teams go down with all the scouts, and then they.
Should I tell a story about Taylor Hall? About what the time, or did I tell us?
You told that. That was the OHL Cup, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
So this was the big tournament, so everybody goes. But the funny thing is, in the finals, all the scouts are gone, so nobody's there watching. because it's
they see the guys, and they figure, why stick around?
Right. So we were went this year, we went, and it was in the finals was the Toronto Marlies, as usually they're in the finals against the tournament, and it was the Markham Islanders.
And we were standing over on the other side on the ice.
Yeah, and Markham wasn't very good that year, and it was just a miracle that they got into the finals. So they're playing, and they have a goalie. His name was Max Strang, I believe. Strang was their goalie. And he was unbelievable, and they were winning 2-0, and a kid named Smith had scored the two goals for Markham, and it was 2-1. And it was about a minute to go in the game, not even a minute, less than a minute to go in the game. And Toronto had a really strong team, and they're all buzzing around. They're all buzzing around the net and everything. And the referee blew the whistle and called a penalty because Markham goalie knocked the puck off the moorings. And you kind of have, like, and nowadays, you just lean on the net. And
yeah, so that one net.
The Markham parents just went bananas. And guess who took the penalty shot? John Tavares took the penalty shot, walked in, snapped it to tie. So the Markham parents are going bananas. So now it's an overtime for the championship. And about a minute into the game, the Smith that had the two goals, the referee gave him just a nothing penalty.
I think he wanted to get it over with. It was cold.
Yeah, it was freezing. It was at Etobicoke Ice Sports. And as they say, the Markham parents were going bananas because they didn't win much, right? And this was a big thing. And I think, I think Sam Gagne was on that team. Basically, the whole power play eventually got drafted and played in the National Hockey League. And they went on for 2 minutes and just were blasting off the post. And this goalie, the string, was making save after save after save. And the penalty's over, and Smith steps out of the penalty box, and the guy hits him with the breakaway pass, and he scored.
Fired it right up the middle.
And he scored the overtime goal, and Markham won. It was like they'd won the Stanley Cup.
I remember he had ripped socks on, and I remember the guy, and he scored, and he picked it up. He picked it up just inside the red line, and he walking in, and he ripped her home, and he beat the Marlies. I never forgot that game. I never forgot that.
That was one of the best. I think it was one of the best games because it was such an it was like a Disney movie. There was such an underdog. I think Markham. I don't even know if they made the playoffs that year.
What about that story that there was a team who was running up the score, and you went in after the game and gave up? And then what was the circumstances Tim?
What happened there is that it was 4-0, and I said, Tim, this team that's ahead 4-0, they're not winning. Because they were doing the back sips and they were doing this.
Oh, they were celebrating.
They were really hot.
Really hot
when they were winning.
And I said, I'm telling you, that other team's going to come back. They're just in the dressing room. Just see them. And sure enough, they come back and beat them 5-4. I'll never forget the score. So,
and when we were watching, you could tell almost the referee was mad at the guys.
The guys were hot dogging. They were sliding along the ice, you know, and all that. So
the losing coach, right, comes up.
Yeah, and he says, they're
like they're up 4-0 going into the third period, and you lose 5-4 for the tournament.
So he said, Don, would you talk to? I said, you want me to talk to them?
Oh,
yeah. And I said, sure, I'll talk to them.
I went,
this is going to be.
You said, no, Dad, I'll talk to you.
I said, no, Dad, we got to get going. You're no.
Now this was a while ago before there were cell phones and everything, right?
Yeah. So I walk in and I said, listen, you. I said, you bunch of, and you look like a bunch of soccer players. And I said, I knew that team was going to beat you, and I just ripped them to shreds. I mean,
the coach must have looked at you.
Well,
you're the
captain. You're supposed to be leading the way. Smarten up. So I looked at the train. They had big eyes. But you know who was on that club was Mete.
No, I don't think that was. I don't think that was Mete. But there's a good story about Jacob Chychrun and Mete and the junior Canadians.
Go ahead. Tell that story.
Well, we were, I think it was 2014, and the junior Canadians and the Marlies were the two top teams. And Victor Mete, who plays for Montreal now, he was probably the star player on the junior Canadians. And could he skate?
Remember? Oh, he was the best skater I ever saw. He was even better than McDavid.
He was like Coffee and Bobby. They just go faster and faster. And he looked like, I said, you know what he was like? He said, you know when you play air hockey and you got the puck the way it floats? That's the way he played.
And I'm talking to Julian and I'm talking to Kirk Muller and them and the Montreal Canadiens. And so I don't know if they listen or not, but I'm going to jump in and say this, okay? That if you're up 6-1 or you're up a big score or you're down a big score, try this guy, Mete, at center ice. Give him a shot at center ice up front. Because I'll tell you, there's nobody in the National Hockey League is a better skater than this guy. But when he's on defense, he just plays defense. And I always said how terrific he would be if he was a centerman.
Yeah, like he got drafted fairly high. But I think that if back then when he was 15, if the coach put him at center, he would have been first overall pick. You know, because I just think, you know, back then, if he had a half step on kids and when he was playing minor midget, you couldn't have caught him.
So now we met Chickering's dad. Boy, he was an enforcer.
Right. So I even remember the rink we were at. We're at the Percy Center, and you and I are talking. All of a sudden, it got really dark. We look up, and there's these two monsters, and it was Jeff Chychrun. And he played a bunch of times, played for Philly.
He was an enforcer.
Yeah, he got in his big 3 years with Philly, and in three years, he got like 500 minutes in penalties. Yeah, and he was a big guy. And he was there with his son, Jacob, who was really...
He was big, too.
He was big. He was close. I think he was over 6 foot at the time, and he was 15.
He was only 15.
And he was, again, he kind of had his head down. And he says, Don, I'm Jeff Chychrun. And he says, my son, Jacob. And he was... He was playing for Little Caesars, and he wanted to come up and play in the OHL, or he wanted to play in the GTHL. And so he says, my son is going to play for the junior Canadians, and he's really good. So you don't know if he's going to be good or not, right? You think he'd be big enough anyway. Boy, was he good at that age.
Oh, I remember the very first game.
Yeah.
And he could have went through the team, any team he wanted. Big guy could have went through. And he used to jump. Remember, he jumped around?
Yeah, he got one goal. I remember. It was just an unbelievable highlight goal. He jumped around. You weren't too happy.
Tell about Mete.
So it was funny that, like, when we're watching, and just how kids or players go, but Victor Mete went before Chychrun came on. Every time he'd get the puck, he'd go through the whole team. And like, he was the first one in the other team's end and the first guy back. Like, he was just all over the ice.
Like Bobby.
Yeah, he was just all over the ice. And as soon as Chychrun came, who rushed with the puck? Mete, he just completely stopped rushing with the puck. He just backed right off. And then one day, you usually don't go into...
No, I don't go into dressing rooms
and stuff. But we kept saying, like, why isn't Mete rushing with the puck? Like, what, like, you know, I don't know if he thought he had to be more defensive or whatever, but then for some reason, you went into the junior Canadians.
I don't usually.
Go in, and then you...
I walked in and I said, which one's Mete? And he put up his hand. I think they lost again, too. Put up his hand, and I said, what is the matter with you? I said, you were a star in this league. You were terrific. You're nothing now. You are an N-O-T-I. You're nothing. And I said, get back the way you were, and, you know, just really. And he picked it up after that.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Jacob Chychrun, he turned around, and he eventually got drafted first overall by the Sarnia Sting. Was rookie of the year, and I think he eventually went in the...
He's got 12 goals now.
Yeah, so now he's coming to his own now.
Well, it's the old story. If your son wants to make the National Hockey League, it's going to take longer to be a defenseman because a defenseman can play on the wing, and I did it one year. For some reason, Eddie Shore put me up on the wing. I don't know why. and I got 5 points in six games. Didn't matter. I went to Three Rivers anyhow. But you cannot play defense. You have to learn how to play defense. It's the hardest spot in hockey, or I think sport, to learn. You learn how to learn at the turn of the corner. So this kid, Chickering, it took him about 2 or 3 years to look at him now. He got 12 goals. He should have had 13 now. The other ones should have counted.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that you notice when we're scouting, everybody knows, is that the goalies are really good now.
The goalies are terrific.
And the
all the scores are 2-1, 2-0.
Yeah, and I went to a game last night. It was just both goalies were just unbelievable. And then the forwards are good, but it's the defense kids. You could see that they have to learn all that stuff. And they don't. They make the most mistakes because they got to learn.
But everybody in the National Hockey League is looking for defensemen. Everybody.
Yeah.
And especially a stay-at-home defenseman. They just think they're the greatest thing. They're scarce as hen's teeth. Everybody wants a stay-at-home defenseman, not a runaround defenseman. And it's hard to learn. It's very hard to learn, and it's the hardest spot in sports, I think, to learn. Goaltenders, they're pretty good. But nobody really has a defensive school. I mean, that's the hardest.
Well, let me ask you, you mentioned something before, the turning in the corners. Wasn't it you that mentioned even to Mike Milbury about turning in the corners? And who would think that that's a big deal, really?
Well, it's hard to explain on radio.
Yeah.
But I'll try to explain. The American kids used to, if you're left-hand side, and you're coming down, and the guy's coming down on you, when you turn in the corner, you take your right leg and switch over, and sometimes you'd stumble. What you have to do is take your left leg and turn in the corner, and so this is
Mike be an American.
Yeah, but here's the story. We had him at the hockey school in Rochester, and his wife at the time.
You told him. You said if you don't learn how to turn, you're never going to make it.
Yeah, he stumbled all the time when he turned. So, and by gall, at 5 o'clock in the morning, I got there about six, and she was dumping the puck in his corner. She was at center ice, and he was turning.
I think she was pregnant at the time.
She was pregnant, in the morning, shooting the puck in the corner so he could learn to turn properly to make it to the NHL.
And I remember Mike, and I'll tell you, long story, but I'm going to tell you a story. There was a guy named, played for me in Rochester. I must tell you about that. Rochester Club played on defense. Went to Colgate. Isn't it Colgate?
Mike Milbury?
Yeah.
Yeah, Colgate. Let me tell you about John Hoff. Let me tell you the story about John Hoff. That when he played for me in Pittsford High, and we had a terrific power play. I must tell you about that all the time. When he went to Colgate, and I saw him that summer in Rochester, New York. And he said, you know, there was a guy that played for us in, and he said he was really good. His name was Mike Milbury. It's my name. Yeah. So this is how close Mike Milbury never made the National Hockey League. So I go to Boston camp, and I remember I had a terrific cold. And at the end of it, John Carlton was the number one scout, I think, And I said, wasn't there a guy that played for Colgate named Mulberry or something? And he says, Mulberry? You mean Milbury. I said, well, put him down. He was the 61st guy at camp. And that's how close. And he was terrific when he came to camp. He was terrific. I'm getting carried away here. So I told him, you know, you're playing terrific. And it was the first time, I'm not mentioning the kid's name, and it never happened to me again. I was my first year in Boston. He says, we're sending Milbury down. I says, sending Milbury down? He's our best defenseman. Doesn't matter. We're keeping our number one guy. It's your kid. So we sent him down, broke his heart. Broke his heart. And he turned into a passive guy. And I'm going to tell you the whole story some. But anyhow, he came back with a vengeance, and Mike Milbury, and he ended up coaching the Bruins and the whole thing. He was 61st, and I couldn't get his name right. It was John. I remember John Hoff telling me about that. You'd like that guy. He kind of plays your style.
Well, we got to tell one story about Mike Milbury. Okay, we got to tell the one.
Oh, there's so many.
There's
though.
So many. And Mike, we lived in North Andover in Boston. After our second year, we moved to North Andover. And Mike Milbury moved. He moved, and he was just down the road from us. And you two guys used to drive into practice all the time.
Used to drive into practice.
So tell the weed story on Route 1. There's lots of stories of Mike Milbury we could tell, but this is one of the best.
So we're driving in, and every day I used to, as we go over the Mystic River Bridge going to Boston Gardens, I'd see the weed growing there, and I'd say, see that weed? That weed's tough. That's the kind of guys I like.
Because it was right on Route 1, which would be like a major highway.
Major highway. There's that weed all the time. So we're driving, and every morning I see that weed.
And it was growing, and it was thriving.
And amongst the traffic and, you know.
Dirt.
And it was going. We're coming down. So we're going home in the spring. We're in the playoffs. We're going in the spring. And along comes one of those, you know, machines that, you know, tears up all the, you know,
cleaning the thing, yeah.
And we're on the far side now. You got to figure this here.
You're
this
on
is the
opposite side.
River Bridge. And I said to him, I said, well, there goes our weed. He's pull over to the side. I said, what do you mean, pull over to the side? Pull over to the side. I pull over to the side. He jumps out, and he dances in amongst the traffic, gets our weed, digs it up. He said, nobody's touching our weed. So anyhow, we get home. And I plant it over the thing. I think it's great. I plant it over the thing.
You're giving it a better life than it had. It should thrive.
This weed's going to thrive. And Rose dug it up and threw it away.
You go, where's my weed? Bob goes, what weed? That thing that I just planted. It was a weed. I got rid of it.
Threw it away. But anyhow, Mike Mills, one of the stories, Mike Milbury danced in amongst the traffic at Mystic River Bridge and got our weed.
And you were, you're one of his kids.
Godfather.
Luke, yeah, I'm his godson. We had a grand time. Yeah, and we had a grand time, Mike Milbury and I, and then he became coach.
Well, you were like John Wayne versus Woody Harrelson.
Oh, yeah, and I'm driving him one time.
Because you had very philosophical
talks. Yeah, I don't know about that. But anyhow, I'm driving in, and I'm talking about John Wayne, and he says, I don't like John. You don't like John Wayne. It's a lucky I just don't throw you right out of this car. And the whole thing is, who do you like?
Woody Allen.
Oh, yeah. So I like Woody Allen.
I think you knew how to push your buttons, though, boy.
No, I don't push my buttons. I should have pushed them right out of the car.
I think to me, one of the best stories with Mike with the Bruins was this would have been the third time we met Montreal. So this was the semifinals. So it's the first game in Montreal, and it was practice. So the practice is over, and Mike's kind of leaning on the glass, and he's looking up at the.
They were so sharp that they didn't have banners hanging down. They were made of wood.
So Mike was looking up, and the reporters go, "Oh, Mike Milbury, are you looking? What are you looking at?" Mike goes, "I'm nothing. I'm just looking at." He goes, "Oh, are you looking at all the beautiful banners at the Montreal Canadiens and how beautiful and almost the mystique around the banners of the Montreal Canadiens and how all the things." And Mike kind of looks, he goes, "Nah, I tell you the truth, I was looking saying, geez, they kind of look kind of chintzy."
And that's the attitude I liked. And Mike was a great guy, and I don't know what we'd done without him, and he was turned into one of my best players. And from that day on, and I always thought of Mike Milbury, no first-round draft choice ever played against because he was a first-round draft choice, they were automatic on the team. Never happened to me, cost me two jobs.